Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Recording is.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, this 28th day of February 2024, where I'm delighted to be joined once again by James Perloff, a brilliant guy. I want him to present, talk about what he takes to be the most important issues of our day. Meanwhile, I want to begin with a view of some of the stories that have occurred recently, including, of course, the death of Jacob Rothschild at 87. Since Rothschild was extremely instrumental in creating the nation of Israel, many regard him as evil and celebrated his death. I find it fascinating that it was very concurrent with a presentation before the International Court of Justice by a brilliant British barrister demonstrating that there was no legal foundation for the creation of the state of Israel. He's going to be remembered for how his family created Israel and is one of the most malevolent figures on earth today. Meanwhile, let me turn to the barrister.
A nation state exclusively for the Jewish people in the land of mandatory Palestine. When this began after the First World War, the Jewish population of that land was 11%. Forcibly implementing Zionism in this demographic context has necessarily involved the extermination or forced displacement of some of the non-Jewish Palestinian population, the exercise of domination over and subjugation, dispossession and immiseration of remaining non-Jewish Palestinians, the emigration to that land of Jewish people, regardless of any direct personal link, and the denial of Palestinian refugees the right to return, all operating through a racist distinction privileging Jewish people over non-Jewish Palestinian people. This has necessitated serious violations of all the fundamental Jos Kogan's and Erga Omnes norms of international law. The right of self-determination, the prohibitions on aggression, genocide, crimes against humanity, racial discrimination, apartheid and torture, and the core protections of IHL. Today, I will address, first, violations of international law arising out of the regime of racial domination, apartheid, perpetrated against the Palestinian people across the entire land of historic Palestine. And then, second, the existential illegality of Israel's occupation of the Palestinian Gaza Strip and West Bank, including East Jerusalem, since 1967. As a necessary prerequisite, I must begin with the special right granted to the Palestinian people in the League Covenant. The legal rights of self-determination of the Palestinian people originates in the sacred trust obligations of Article 22 of the Lee Covenant, part of the Versailles Treaty. Palestine, an A-class mandate under British colonial rule, was, after the First World War, supposed to have its existence as an independent state provisionally recognized, a sui generis right of self-determination. The UK and other members of the League Council attempted to bypass this, incorporating the 1917 Balfour Declaration commitment to establishing a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine into the instrument stipulating how the mandate would operate. However, the Council had no legal power to bypass the covenant in this way. It acted ultra vires, and the relevant provisions were legally void. There was and is no legal basis in that mandate instrument for either a specifically Jewish state in Palestine or the UK's failure to discharge the sacred trust obligation to implement Palestinian self-determination.
Well, there's more to it, of course. He's got a lot to say. This has been heralded as an historic development. I believe it will go down as among the most important speeches ever presented. James, I'm interested in your take on this. He's really laying out a case by going back to the League of Nations and its mandate, which had heretofore been largely eclipsed from discussion, to suggest actually there is no legal justification for the state of Israel, which came as quite stunning news to the judges. Their expressions were really taken aback. Your thoughts?
Well, he did a very good summary there. And of course, the original Balfour Declaration, which, not surprisingly, the British government addressed to our Rothschild, Lord Walter Rothschild, that document specifically said that and created a Jewish homeland in Palestine, that the rights of non-Jewish people in Palestine would not be infringed. But we know just from looking at the progressive map of Israeli expansion, which obviously they're now contemplating taking over Gaza, they're destroying Gaza, and I think the end game is pretty obvious. They want to annex it and expel all the residents there, and then they'll turn their sights on what's left, you know, Jerusalem and the West Bank. It's been part of a long-term ongoing plan, but clearly the rights of non-Jewish people in Palestine has not been respected. As a matter of fact, that was not in the original Balfour Declaration, as I understand it, but they added it in as an afterthought to make it more publicly palatable.
Egypt, which had heretofore been reluctant to accept any Palestinian refugees, where they all know if they leave, they are never going to have the right to return, has right. apparently been bribed with a $10 billion loan, and now they're going to construct some kind of camp for the Palestinians that might be initially conceived as temporary, but is going to turn out to be permanent. Your thoughts?
Yeah, the Palestinians have always been under this Israeli mandate of no return. Once they take over your land and your homes, they never give it back. So that'd be no surprise. I don't know what the ultimate fate would be. I don't know if they'll end up being refugees to Europe and America, like so many other peoples from the Middle East and Africa. I don't know what the future would portend, but it's very unfortunate that Egypt has not reached out more to its many of the people, of course, in Palestine, and fellow Muslims, but of course there's also the Christian population there as well.
And I understand the president of Egypt actually is Jewish, which may give create an advantage here for the Israelis in trying to dispose of the unwanted occupants of Palestine, namely the Palestinians. This is one of the greatest outrages of world history. James, I'm sure you agree. I have been appalled at the role of the United States here, providing the weapons, the bombs, the munition, because it could all end tomorrow if we would just cut off the American supplies that are indispensable and that make us complicit in genocide.
Yeah, of course, America has been under the thumb of as small as they are and as big as we are, we've been the thumb of Israel and AIPAC for a long time now.
Yes.
They control, so, as Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman from Georgia, would agree, the pressure upon congressmen and senators to support Israel is quite phenomenal on this country. And you go back even to the days of Harry Truman. 1948, Harry Truman recognized the State of Israel 11 minutes after it was proclaimed. And according to President John F. Kennedy, Truman did that because he received a $2 million bribe from Abraham Feinberg, who went on to be the founder of AIPAC. So I always like to say, when Truman says the buck stops here, he meant it. Yeah, right. $2 million.
$2 million stopped there. Yeah. That's fascinating, James. And of course, Cynthia, whom I adore, went on Press TV in 2011 to explain about the pledge that new members of Congress asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of even those of the United States, and virtually everyone signs it. Thus, I think it's quite appropriate to describe our Congress as Israeli-occupied territory.
Correct. A lot of people, besides the map of Israel expanding and Palestine, there's maps in the United States showing the Israeli flag getting bigger and bigger and bigger within our own country.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, I'm very impressed with what's going on here. Meanwhile, NATO's debate over direct military intervention in Ukraine shows its desperation from zero hedge. French President Macron hosted over 20 fellow European leaders in Paris Monday to discuss their next moves in Ukraine, including the possibility of a conventional NATO intervention, which he said they had ruled out for reasons of strategic ambiguity, despite not reaching a consensus on this. His Polish counterpart also confirmed the subject was the most heated. The very fact this scenario had been officially considered shows how desperate NATO has become. Russia's victory at Avdiivka, which was a natural result of winning the race of logistics, the war of attrition with NATO, where, of course, as you well know, Ukraine has lost over 500,000 soldiers. It's run out of munitions. It's run out of tanks. Is it totally one-sided? The idea of NATO intervening is, in my opinion, foolhardy in the extreme, really completely irresponsible, but that's the sort of thing they engage in, prompted policymakers to contemplate what they will do in the event that Russia achieves a breakthrough across the line of contact and begins steamrolling through the rest of Ukraine. They hadn't previously considered this as a serious possibility until last summer's counteroffensive failed, exposing the weakness of their military-industrial complex and tactical and strategic planning. It's now a credible scenario, reviving speculation about a Polish-led intervention aimed at drawing a red line in the sand for halting any potential Russian breakthrough before it gets too far. This would preserve the G7's sphere of economic influence in Ukraine while preventing the former Soviet Republic's collapse and thus averting another Afghan-like foreign policy disaster for the West. The problem, however, is that Poland doesn't want to be put up to this only to be hung out to dry. James, the very idea of NATO, I mean, we already have NATO troops, we've got French troops, we've got U.S. troops, our own Secretary of Defense appears to have at least lost a leg in Ukraine when he was visiting there in an underground bunker and there was a Russian missile attack, and now he's walking around on an artificial leg. I find this bizarre beyond belief. Russia has shown its military superiority. Just consider the logistics. For Russia, they're very tight, and they have all the armaments, all the munitions they could need. They have superior weapons across the board. Could there be anything more foolhardy than NATO getting more deeply involved in Ukraine, James?
Yeah, we shouldn't have been involved in the first place. Of course, it goes back really, well, probably precedes 2014, but in 2014, you know, you had the duly elected leader of the Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych. He declined World Bank loans, and he was prepared to take a better offer received from the Russians. And so, of course, they say it's a CIA coup. And so ever since then, Ukraine's not had a really legitimate government. First it's Poroshenko, now it's Zelensky, who's really got no political experience before he comes to office. He's done gay porn things. He's an actor. He's not a politician. You know, he's not a statesman. He's corrupt.
He's a pianist.
And he spends, you know, millions of dollars. His wife took a, I don't know if it's Tiffany's or one of the major jewelry stores in New York City and spent, I think it's like $1 million on jewelry there. You know, he's utterly corrupt. And the Russian intervention took place because the Russian ethnic population in the east of Ukraine, the Donbass region, was being they were being shelled and killed, and they appealed to the Russians for help. And the Russians aren't there to conquer Ukraine. I mean, they've tried to depict him. He's this Hitler guy who's out to conquer the world. Because that raises all kinds of questions about the true depiction of Hitler as well. But, you know, if you look at the very beginning of this conflict, normally the way you would try to handle it would be through diplomacy. You would talk to the Russians and have the U.S. media should have been showing what Putin said about how NATO broke its promise not to push further to the east. And Zelensky not only wanted to become a member of NATO, but he wanted nuclear weapons. And Putin's made a very good point. He said, how would the U.S. feel if we had nuclear weapons on the Canadian border of the United States? We don't want nuclear weapons on our border, and we're going to intervene to prevent this and to help the people, Russian-speaking people in the east. It's a limited intervention. They've got no intention of world conquest here. On the other hand, this is a border conflict for them. We go halfway around the world to Afghanistan, invade Iran, years ago, Vietnam, you know. Oh, when we do it, it's okay. When the Russians do it on their own border, it's a crime. It makes no sense. We should have engaged in negotiations from the beginning. We should have listened to the Russian side of the story. But instead, we immediately went to sending the Ukrainians weapons, made a decision without consulting the Russians, no diplomacy involved, and put on sanctions, which are hurting us more than they are the Russians. So none of this makes any sense. I hate to say it, but the whole West is crazy right now.
And some of these sanctions, like, say, taking this $300 billion of Russian assets are destroying confidence in American financial responsibility. I mean, it appears if you get engaged in banking, this is very analogous to doing business in New York City now. You're just fine if you could adhere to conventional business practices, as has Donald Trump, unless you run afoul of the Democrat politicians, in which case you can be cut off at the legs. So that investors are saying, stay the hell out of New York City. It's going to do tremendous damage to New York, and it's all deliberate to trash Trump. But similar with all these sanctions and stealing of assets. I mean, other nations look at the United States and say, how can we have any confidence in dealing with them financially when if we run afoul of their politics, they can do to us what they've done to Russia? I think, James, this is calamitous for the United States.
Yeah, it's strange how things have changed. You know, back in the 80s, I started writing for the New American Magazine, a publication of the John Birch Society, and we at that time, the Reagan days, we looked on ourselves as the United States as the leaders of the free world, and the Soviet Union as, you know, the enemy. And now it seems that we're the ones who are going communist now. I kept waiting. You know, there's this author named KGB defector Anatoly Golitsyn. His escape from the Soviet Union is actually depicted in an Alfred Hitchcock movie made in 1969. Topaz. Anyway, he came over here and he said that the Russians are going to liberalize, which was correct. And he said it's all a KGB plot, and they're eventually going to return to Stalinism in Russia. Maybe that is true. I was waiting for like 3 decades for that to happen. I said, you know what? Russia is the one that's banning gay parades. They're the ones who are reviving Christianity and moral values. And it's the United States that's taking on communism. And I finally dropped that paradigm that Golitsyn had set up. He said, you know, that's not the way things are turning out. And after all, unfortunately, it seems like the United States and the West, we're turning into the bad guys now. I mean, we're the ones pushing transgenderism in our schools. We're letting, you know, the Biden administration, obviously, so many Americans disagree with this, but letting, I think there's over 7 million illegal immigrants under Biden, and
yes,
they're starting to destroy our cities. We're under attack in so many ways now, whether it's the bioweapons and the sudden death from mRNA vaccines or the autism being caused by the multitude of childhood vaccinations that are mandated if you want to go to school, the GMOs, Bill Gates and his plan to block out sunlight and make us eat artificial meat, and the World Economic Forum telling us we should eat bugs, all for climate change, which doesn't even exist in the first place, beyond some geoengineering they have done. So we're in so much trouble in this nation, culturally, economically, physically. I talked to a military recruiter not too long ago, and he said they can't get the recruits now. They can't pass the mental or physical requirements to enter the armed forces because we lost a lot of our best men because they wouldn't take the rush through COVID vax. You know, we're in so much trouble in this country right now.
It's tranny, you know, what red-blooded young man wants to take showers with trannies or gays or whatever? I mean, they've turned the army into an intolerable institution for the especially young Southern boys who have been the backbone of our military in the past, James. It's just an atrocity. And now, you know, they're talking about restructuring the military, but it's of necessity. They don't have the manpower. So they're restructuring and trying to present it as though it were a virtue.
Yeah. I would have to say this, too. In the event of a war breaking out between the West and the East, the West doesn't have the morale or the motivation. I think that the East would have the motivation. And I also suggest that even though we have a bigger military budget than, much bigger than Russia's, a lot of our money goes to black budgets and corruption and rather than improving our military capabilities. And we would very likely lose a war with Russia. As I understand, they have these hypersonic missiles now. We would lose in a war. It would be disastrous. And I think that's probably, of all the things going on right now that's so terrible, the worst outcome would be a military conflict growing out of either the situation in the Middle East with our supporting Gaza or the war in Ukraine. And again, I understand just now there's a military exercise taking place on the borders of Ukraine and Romania by NATO with 20,000 troops. And if we go ahead with Macron's hint that we might start sending troops in there. By the way, you were mentioning Poland being sort of the fall guy in this. You know, it just reminded me of an analogy of World War II. Poland was the fall guy then. They were told that if they stood up to Germany, that they would get plenty of assistance from France, England, and America. They given those assurances. They never got it because France and England and America were in no position to get to help Poland. They would have had to either go through the North Sea, which is defended by the German Navy, or they had to break through the Siegfried Line if France wanted to go and help them. They did not get any help, and I understand that if Polish soldiers were together in a POW camp with British soldiers, they'd beat them up because they'd been set up starting that whole war going. And it looks like maybe they can use Poland again to initiate something from what you were saying before.
They have a slow learning curve, James. All those Polish jokes have a foundation in fact. I mean, it's astonishing. Meanwhile, to turn to another breaking story, we have an airman setting himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy to protest the Gaza genocide. You know, James, what's underreported here about this Aaron Bush now is that he had orders to go for a duty in Israel. Now, where have we heard that the United States is sending forces, American forces, to fight in Israel? In my opinion, that is the story. But the fact that he immolated himself, frankly, it's, of course, parallel to the Buddhist monks protesting the war in Vietnam.
Right.
I think it's had the kind of effect he wanted to have. It's caused a lot of people to stop and think about it. And the Zionists are trying to figure ways to discredit him and make it out as though he were a loon. But in fact, he's been very noble, I think, and self-sacrificing out of principle. He doesn't want to go and serve and participate in a genocide. That's where Joe Biden has put the United States of America today. We're complicit in genocide.
Right. I just had over 30,000 people, including, well, the last figure I saw in Chilcombe's over 13,000 dead, not counting the wounded. And like you said before, it's been done with American weapons. And now they want to involve U.S. troops as well, which, of course, could easily escalate. You know, if we got into a fight with Hezbollah, which is supported by Iran, and then we end up attacking Iran, you know, Iran could call on its allies, China and Russia, and all of a sudden you got a world war on your hand, entirely aside from the situation in Ukraine. So very, very dangerous situation. I was surprised to see some criticism of Bushnell in alt media saying the guy was a loony too. But I consider it, it's almost a supreme self-sacrifice to make a statement to the world that the people in the U.S. military do not want to die for this Zionist cause, which we've already done. You know, I'm sure you've seen that clip of Wesley Clark after 9/11 where he said we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years. And this is all not to our benefit and not to the benefit of the Middle East. Only Israel benefits from these wars against its enemies.
Yes. They're using America. They want American soldiers to fight their wars. A friend of mine has said that's the reason the national anthem of Israel is Onward Christian Soldiers. They're using us to fight their wars. Yeah. Truly disgusting. No, I think the guy was heroic, and I think he had the kind of effect he was hoping to achieve. And as I watched these videos, photos, I mean, he was very deliberate about it. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was, you know, calling out a free Palestine while he was dying. I thought it was heroic myself. I mean, if one were to make a gesture.
Yeah, and you notice how he stood there as he was in flames. He maintained his posture for a while.
He did.
Showing the determination that he had. And, you know, most of us would, you know, we got a, you know, a bad splinter or something. We, you know,
I know.
This guy put it on fire. He stood there and made a statement.
James.
I do regard this moment.
James, we got a break. We'll continue with James Perloff when we return from this break. Stand by.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And of course, James, I'm showing a photograph of him, a fire there, standing in front of the Israeli embassy. Wildland fire, he repeatedly shouted, "Free Palestine." He burned for about 1 minute before law enforcement extinguished the flames. One initially drew his gun on the airman as he burned. Washington's Fire and Emergency Medical Service said in a post that the airman was transported to the hospital with critical life-threatening injuries. Yeah, he wasn't going to survive that undertaking. The protest came as the number of Palestinians killed in Gaza by Israel is approaching 30,000 and over 69,000 have been wounded, two-thirds of whom being women and children. The International Court of Justice has ruled it's plausible Israel is committing genocide and decided to take up the case brought to the court by South Africa. In other words, they have a preliminary hearing to see if there's a prima facie case. And only if they pass that barrier do they move to an actual formal investigation or hearing. They have passed that threshold, of course, and it's going to happen. Despite the massive civilian casualty rate and international pressure, the U.S. continues to provide unconditional support for the slaughter. I think that antiwar.com is very good in its reporting, James. Your thoughts on all the above?
Well, it's absolutely true. There's no justification. It's obvious, as always, the Israeli response to any kind of attack from Palestinians is totally disproportionate. And, you know, I wrote an article on the history of Israeli false flags and their use, their constant attempt to portray Palestinians as terrorism when usually the terrorism was coming from the Israelis themselves. You know,
yes.
This is the King David hotel bombing that killed 91, where they went into the hotel with bombs disguised as Arabs, or the Levant affair of 1954 when they tried to blow up American and British civilian facilities disguised as Arabs and blame it on the Arabs, or the attack on the USS Liberty in 67.
Sure.
When they attacked the Liberty in unmarked planes, planning to blame Egypt so we would join Israel in the Six-Day War, which that fortunately failed because they failed to sink the Liberty, or the bombing of Libya in 1986 by Reagan, which was blamed, there was a blowing up of the La Belle discotheque in Germany, and Reagan himself actually seemed to honestly believe that was Libyans doing that, but it's all based upon a transmitter put in Tripoli by the Mossad, which is broadcasting fake terrorist messages. You've got the 1994 bombing of the Israeli embassy in London, which, according to Annie Machon, whistleblower from MI5, which is the British FBI, the Israelis did that themselves. The Mossad did that. No Israelis were killed, but it was blamed on Palestinians. Of course, it was 9/11, which has Israeli fingerprints all over it. And then if you take a look at this, this genocide in Gaza, they're killing tens of thousands of people, and Netanyahu is claiming, "Oh, we're just killing terrorists, you know, and we know where the Hamas terrorists are." Well, if their intelligence is still good and they know which school and hospital and mosque and church and apartment building the Hamas terrorists are, why didn't they know that on October the 7th when Hamas was able to breach, I think it was at least 15 places of their border wall, which they say is the most secure border wall in the world. I've heard on my website, I've got an article on that, and I have a number of video clips which were posted on social media by former IDF soldiers who used to work on that border wall. And they said that even if a rabbit was to touch that wall, it would set off alarms. And with 5 minutes, you'd have all kinds of armored personnel carriers arriving at the scene. Yet on October the 7th, the electronic surveillance wasn't working. The IDF was in stand down and they didn't respond for 7 hours instead of 5 minutes. It doesn't make any sense. This looks like another Pearl Harbor being set up. They wanted this attack in order to justify the massive slaughter. And obviously they've damaged Gaza now. They've destroyed so much infrastructure in Gaza. There's no way the Gazans could rebuild this unless they had massive help from overseas.
Oh, yeah.
The intent, clearly, is to drive out all the people of Gaza. Then they're going to, Israel will take over Gaza. They'll probably build beachfront properties, just luxury beachfront properties. And they're also very interested in this, they call the Leviathan gas and oil field, which is off the coast of Israel, I think, especially Gaza. And they want to build a pipeline to Western Europe from there. It really has 600 cubic meters of natural gas, 600 billion cubic meters of natural gas. They want to use that, send it through Turkey, through Ukraine, which, of course, is on board the plan, cut off Russia and its supply of natural gas to Europe, which we already saw the Nord Stream pipeline being blown up. You know, it's so obvious what they're up to, but this is just an utter atrocity that we are condoning genocide. And, of course, unfortunately, we have Christian Zionists here in the United States who are actually applauding this, saying that the Israelis are God's chosen people, but they aren't, because if you read the book, The 13th Tribe,
Kessler.
I'm sorry, what was the author's name?
Arthur Kessler.
Arthur Kessler, who was a Hungarian Jew. He said that 90% of the people who call themselves Jews are not descendants of Abraham, which is the biblical justification for taking over Palestine. Actually, they're from Turkic people from Khazaria, which converted to Judaism in the 8th century. That's even on Wikipedia. And so they have no possible biblical claim to the land. They're not the descendants of Abraham. And it's just absurd that Christian Zionists are actually standing on the sidelines and applauding, saying Israel can do whatever it wants because they're the chosen people. It's nonsense. It's garbage. And I do have an article on my website, jamesperloff.net, on the whole history of the Christian Zionist movement, going back to the Schofield Reference Bible published in 1917, the same year as the Balfour Declaration, designed to persuade Christians that it was their duty to support the return of Jews to Palestine, which is just nonsense. There's nothing in the Bible that suggests that. Any references to the return of Jews to Palestine was in reference to the books of Nehemiah. When the Jews did return from Persia to Palestine, that's what it was talking about. There's no requirement for Jews to return to Palestine. And in fact, there are many Jewish groups such as the Turikana, which are absolutely opposed to Zionism, but they don't get press. They have to buy it in the New York Times, and the New York Times will not cover it on their own.
Well, Israel, the Jews have permanently forfeited their victimhood card, which was all, of course, fabricated after World War II to justify the creation of the Israeli state, which now we have this brilliant barrister dissecting and debunking, I mean, actually positively refuting in what's going to go down as one of the most important historical speeches of recent history, I have no doubt. But also, you know, they've become so vicious, they're so sadistic. I mean, many have said, you know, you had that false portrayal of how the Nazis were treating the Jews. Well, the fact is, the Jews are treating the Palestinians precisely the way they claimed, falsely, with gross exaggeration, the Germans had been treating them. James, it's just insulting beyond words. And as I say, anyone who does research on the history of World War II, if you've done the research, then you're either a Holocaust denier or a big fat liar. There aren't any options. In fact, Nick Holstrom, a colleague of mine who's an historian of science from the UK, has published this brilliant book called Breaking the Spell that I think is the definitive debunking of the Hola hoax, where he had the benefit of the British death books because they'd cracked the German code and they had copies of all the German meticulous detailed records, which confirmed the International Committee of the Red Cross, which concluded when it recalibrated its numbers in 1993, that in all the camps combined, 296,081 died, none of whom were put to death in a gas chamber. In fact, Yeah. Fred Luchter was actually sent over there during the trial of Ernst Zundel, and he gave his report in the second trial of Zundel in 1988, and who has now spoken at two of my false flag and conspiracy conferences, most recently just this past December, just reviewed all the evidence of their complete and total absence of any gas chambers, and he was like the world's leading expert on gas chambers at the time. James, it's so insulting. And yet we have one memorial, one after another for the Holocaust, because we're being played. And in some nations, including Germany, sad to say, if you dispute the Holocaust, you're subject to imprisonment. I mean, this is just lunatic.
You're so right about Fred Leuchter. He pointed out, for example, he would examine these so-called gas chambers, and they supposedly have the original doors on them. Well, the doors were not airtight, he says. In a gas chamber, it's got to be an airtight door, or the poison gas will go out and hit the guards. And he also did tests on the walls, found there was no evidence of poison gas. And he found that the pipelines going in there, you know, we were always told, oh, the Jews were told that you're going to take a shower. But in reality, they pumped poison gas. He found that, in fact, those were shower lines. And so the whole thing was completely fictitious. You know, it's interesting if you watch the old movie Stalag 17 with William Holden, who won an Oscar for that movie. It was it shows you German prisoner of war camps. And I was told by a German officer, those are very accurate depictions. You know, the guys who wrote the original screenplay actually had been in German prisoner of war camps. And you could see that they all had bunks, individual bunks, blankets, a stove, shelter. You know, three meals a day, wasn't Ritz food, but the Red Cross did visit and they found no irregularities. And actually, there's a scene in there where in that movie where Russian women are being deloused by going through showers. And that's what the purpose of the showers was, to get rid of the risk of
body virus, yeah,
which eventually took after we bombed Germany and destroyed its infrastructure and there's no transportation left. We couldn't get the Germans couldn't get
food
or medical supplies. We even destroyed their water supplies in some of those camps by bombing them. And then, of course, disease set in and they had to be quarantined and nobody could get in there to help them. And up until 1944, the Red Cross reported those camps were in good conditions. But 1945, they couldn't visit because there's no way to even get to the camps. And those pictures of people starving or people usually who are diseased and they didn't have access to food, but it was largely the Allied fault for bombing all the infrastructure. The Luftwaffe was history. They couldn't resist the bombing. And the whole thing was just a fiction that they deliberately tried to kill people. If they wanted to kill people, they just could kill them. Actually, those camps, as I understand it, were designed for people who could not help in the war effort or could not be trusted with war. If it wasn't just Jews, it was Russian prisoners of war, criminals, communists, etc. They put them to work making artificial rubber, aircraft parts, uniforms, things like that. So they couldn't be trusted on the front, but they could at least do labor that would help the war effort, because all hands on deck. I mean, Germany was fighting a two-front war with on the right, they had our left, as we would look at it, they had the Americans, the British, the Free French, the Free Poles, the New Zealanders, South Africans, Australians coming at them. And on the other side, they're the Russians coming in with all of the massive Soviet Union. And so they didn't have time to go around killing people in their own country. They had to put everybody to work. It made no sense for them just to slaughter people. The slaughter was from disease and starvation, largely inflicted by the unfortunate outcome of what happens when you're reducing a nation to rubble, as happened in Dresden, as happened in Hamburg, as happened in Berlin.
Nick has fabulous photographs in his book, including of hundreds of children who were born in these camps. I mean, it's remarkable, James. As I understand it, there's 9 months of gestation involved in producing a human offspring. That's what I'm given to believe. And yet we had hundreds of these babies born in these camps. My favorite photo, however, is the British soccer team at Auschwitz. So I put it on the back cover of my book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon other. What? You didn't know there was a British soccer team at Auschwitz? And they're looking very fit. They're looking very fit, James.
And don't forget the swimming pool.
Yeah. The woodworking shop, the symphony hall.
So people have asked, well, you know, at Auschwitz, they've admitted that it wasn't 4.5 million who got gassed, it was 1.5 million. So even Auschwitz has deducted 3 million from the 6 million.
Yeah.
They still claim it was 6 million. And there's a meme of Albert Einstein saying 6 million minus 1.5 million equals 6 million.
Right.
Just crazy. I mean, and then where are all the bodies? You know, well, where are the remains of these people?
Yeah.
To see them. And also aerial photographs of those camps taken by the Allies showed no evidence for these extermination camps going on. So it was not a deliberate extermination. It was very unfortunate what happened to people in those camps, but it was not a deliberate, methodical German plan for extermination.
You're 100% correct, and there's much more we could add to reinforce those points, but you've made them very well. Meanwhile, something strange is going on in Brussels. This is a headquarters for the European Union. Farmers are taking the fight to the doorstep of the EU, revolting against climate communism. Here's some video, James, if you haven't seen it. I mean, it's like a war zone. This is part of the protests against the EU by farmers, but it's not getting any coverage in the United States. To the best of my knowledge, no coverage whatsoever.
Yeah, the farmer revolt, you know, part of the climate change agenda, this net zero, is they want to make war on meat. So they're saying that in Ireland, for example, they plan to slaughter 1 million livestock because supposedly cows and sheep burping and farting is causing global warming.
Absurd.
In the meantime, the elites fly to Davos, Switzerland, as many as 1,700 private jets landed at one time, and those jets give off more carbon in one trip than your car will in a whole year.
Sure.
But those kind of contradictions are not mentioned, in the mainstream media. And they want to make war not only on meat and force us to eat bugs and artificial meat. And, of course, Bill Gates is heavily invested in artificial meat. It is now the United States' largest landowner. But they're making war on crops. They're shutting down. They want to shut down, I think it's either 300 or 3,000 farms in the Netherlands, which is Europe's largest food exporter.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why these farmers are out in force to shut down the farms. And they're claiming that the fertilizer is bad for the environment. Well, if you cut out the livestock and the crops, what have you got left? You're going to create mass starvation, which, by the way, famine was one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in the Bible. And it looks like we have, and plague was too. And of course, you got your bioweapons now and disease X. So it looks like an Antichrist era is coming upon us. You know, the Bible says in the book of Revelation that Antichrist will not let anybody buy or sell unless they've got a mark on their forehead or their hand. Well, we saw when the masking, you couldn't buy or sell without wearing a mask. And then I live in Massachusetts, in Boston. The mayor, Michelle Wu, said you couldn't go into a restaurant or a other major public venue without proof of vaccination, although they laid off that for right now. But the thing is that there's a company in Sweden which has developed a microchip then your skin will have proof of your vaccination, and which allow you to sell or buy, right? And also Bill Gates went to the Rice School of Bioengineering, and this is right on the Rice School of Bioengineering's website, and said, hey, we need to know who's been vaccinated. So Rice School of Bioengineering has been developed a barcode tattoo that will fluoresce with information after it's injected as part of a vaccine. And I just last year gave a history, PowerPoint history, to a gathering on the whole history of the New World Order from the panic from 1907 and founding of the Fed, right through all the wars and right up to climate change. And the last thing I showed was a woman at Whole Foods, and she was buying groceries with a chip in her hand. Well, I was talking to a priest the other day, and I said, you know, I'm not saying this is the mark of the beast, but it's clearly the technology to have a mark on your hand that will allow you to buy or sell. Is the technology is right already here, and we already know with China, with its social credit scores, they'll take away your ability to buy or sell because everything is digital. There's no money now. There's no physical money in China. It's totally cashless. And that's what they plan for the whole world. So we're on the threshold we may not be in the end, what the Bible calls the end times. Not everybody I know believes in the end times, but we're certainly on the threshold of a satanic, antichrist-like New World Order, especially when you see the consolidation of the media under five corporations and all of the world leaders talking about build back better. And they all say the same thing about transgenderism, climate change, COVID, war in Ukraine. They're all the media and the politicians are saying the same thing. So everything is control in the West is consolidated except for what remains of independent journalism, people such as you and myself and James Corbett and others who are still trying to independently bring the truth to the people.
James, you're just so wonderfully well informed. It's a delight to converse with you, my friend. Really, truly a delight. Meanwhile, let me add, we have a Russian website claiming there was an attempted assassination of Tucker Carlson. There's a great disenchantment among powerful forces about Tucker having interviewed Putin. I mean, he revealed Putin to be highly intelligent, very informed, totally in control of his faculties, utterly rational and sane, which, alas, James, cannot be said of the leaders of the West. Here we have the latest attempted assassination of Tucker Carlson. A man had just been arrested in Moscow, accused of being paid by Ukrainian intelligence to plant an explosive device on Tucker's vehicle and assassinate a prominent American journalist while he was there to interview the president of Russia. And here's one of the stories about it in the foreign press. James, I don't have any doubt about the authenticity of those stories, just as I know there have been about a dozen attempts already to take out Donald Trump, and I'm very apprehensive that that might yet come to pass. There are some who suggest Nikki Haley seems so giddy in spite of having lost, what, six or seven times in a row now by colossal margins because she has inside information that Donald isn't going to make it to the election. So if she hangs in there, she thinks she's going to be elevated if Donald is taken out. Your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. This has been an election year. The elections are a big concern. But I guess my primary concern is the fact that the last election was stolen by both ballot stuffing, which Dinesh D'Souza brought out with proof in his documentary 2000 Mules, yeah, where they actually caught people on camera. And, you know, it was interesting. Georgia had been declared by the networks to be won by Trump that evening. He had a 57-43% margin. But during the night, a quarter of a million so-called mail-in Biden ballots were stuffed into the boxes, and they actually caught these people on camera stuffing them.
Yes.
So the people weren't punished. And, of course, that turned the state of Georgia over to Biden. Same thing happened in – this is funny. Arizona voted for Biden. Now, Arizona has consistently voted Republican over the years. And, in fact, John F. Kennedy lost Arizona by 10 points. But we're supposed to believe that Joe Biden is more popular in Arizona than John F. Kennedy. I'm sorry. I'm not buying. They discussed close to a quarter of a million votes into the boxes after midnight and turned that state to Biden. Donald Trump should still be president.
Yes, yes, yes. Not only were they not punished, they were rewarded. They were given, I don't know, 10, 20 bucks for every ballot they stuffed. James, it was so insulting. And meanwhile, of course, we got this bizarre attorney general in New York. She's actually posting the total of interest on the absurd charge against Trump, which is more than a staggering $454 million when you factor in interest. And this Letitia James is posting it on a daily basis as to how much money is involved. Meanwhile, and this comes from a surprising source, Jeb Bush says cases against Trump and Musk imperil the rule of law. He's absolutely right. Democrats and their ruthlessly partisan prosecutors and judges may have gone a bridge too far with a grotesque kangaroo court trial and obscene financial penalty in New York City brought by the Attorney General Letitia Leakaboo James, adjudicated by left-wing Judge Arthur Engoron. And it's not just Trump either. It's also targeted billionaire Tesla, SpaceX, CEO Elon Musk, through the same weaponizing of the court. In an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, the former Florida governor, along with tech investor and entrepreneur Joe Lonsdale, argue the case that the cases against Trump and Musk are so out of line that they imperil the rule of law, do damage to the legal system. Every American has a right to be critical of Trump's politics. One of us actually ran against him in 2016, or of Musk's public persona. But equality before the law is precious. And these rulings represent a crisis not only for the soundness of our courts, but for the business environment that has allowed the U.S. to prosper. If these rulings stand, the damage could cascade through the economy, creating fear of arbitrary enforcement against entrepreneurs who seek public office or raise their voices as citizens in a way politicians dislike. It goes on and on. It's really shocking, James, what's happened here. I'm going to return to other stories, but we're coming close to the break. I've never in my lifetime seen anything like this weaponization of the law against Donald Trump. I mean, every one of those cases has no foundation in the law or in the facts, James, and yet they're pursuing them with the aggression and zealotry. Stunning, absolutely, and appalling.
Yeah, it's obviously no coincidence that this court ruling and the $500 million penalty is happening during an election year. They obviously want Trump's image not only to be vilified, which they've been doing for years anyway, but they also want to hit him in the pocketbook in order to impair his ability to run a campaign for a reelection. So it's amazing to see the level of corruption that is America's descent into. I still remember fondly the 1950s when I was a boy and we had Leave It to Beaver on television and we didn't have to worry about chemtrails and directed energy weapons and GMOs and we had 10 years between the Korean War and the start of the Vietnam War, where we were sort of a golden age for America, where we were not only not at war, but we were prosperous and united. There was no significant feminist movement, no abortion, there was no racism, no.
We both lived through it, James. We'll be right back with James Perloff after this break. Stand by.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's my great pleasure to have James Perloff with me today. I want to mention another story, James, for your contemplation. Soros linked individuals. Linked individuals are exposing themselves and being rigging elections all over the world on behalf of the Democratic Party. It seems to me, James, that Soros bought the DNC lock, stock, and barrel. For example, when Kamala Harris was announced to be the running mate for Biden, it was by his son. It wasn't through any Democrat process. She'd actually dropped out of the competition before Iowa. She didn't even make it to Iowa. I think they wanted someone who was so vacuous, so incompetent, that the very idea of her ascending to the presidency would be a motive inhibiting impeaching the guy they were going to put up, at the top of the ticket. And of course, the whole thing was an utter disgrace. And as we agree, completely, totally stolen. My best estimate, Trump got over 100 million votes and Biden about 37. Your thoughts?
Definitely a stolen election. You know, Jim, when he was installed as president, even then, it was clear that he was senile dementia, or at least early stages of it. And, you know, my thought at that time was they're probably going to replace this guy really fast. But I think they actually like having a senile guy there because Biden will do whatever he's told to do. He's malleable. He reads things off a teleprompter. He clearly is not making any significant decisions whatsoever in the United States. He has handlers. I don't know exactly who his handlers are, if they're members of his cabinet or somebody we just don't know about. But he, I have to say, he's the worst president in American history. We've had corrupt presidents, Woodrow Wilson and Lyndon Baines Johnson did pretty bad things. But this is the time we've had a senile president. And it seems they actually wanted to keep him there because they could get him to sign any legislation they wanted to sign, any executive orders, and say whatever they wanted to say. So they've kept him there. My fear right now is, you know, the Democrats are going to have a hard time covering up the senile for the 2024 election. They might find a reason to drop him out for health reasons or some people have pretended that, suggested that he might be a senator. Go ahead, yeah.
No, take it for granted, but Biden's not going to be on the ticket. He's going to drop out between Super Tuesday and the convention in Chicago. There's a lot of speculation about who might replace him. I, for a long time, thought it would be Gavin Newsom and Michelle that would move in. They'll get Kamala out real fast. But I had a friend suggest an alternative that's even more stunning in a way. Hillary Clinton might want to get back in the fray. You know, she has these illusions about her popularity. Nobody gives a rat's ass about Hillary Clinton. She's one of the most despicable human beings on the face of earth. And the idea that she could be promoting herself for this role again is colossal stupidity. But the whole Democrat Party appears to be detached from reality from A to Z.
Right. Yeah, very good description of it. Yeah. I don't know. Hillary's getting a little bit old. My fear has been that they're going to run Gavin Newsom. You know, the complaint about Biden is he's too old. Gavin would strike Democratic voters. Well, here's a guy who's young and handsome, you know. But you see how he's destroyed California.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the no bail crimes.
Yeah.
The homeless people on the streets. If he starts running America the way he's running California, we'd be in for a disaster. I'm concerned it's going to be Newsom, as you were said, you earlier expressed a concern with. I quite don't see Hillary doing it, making a comeback after 4 years being gone. But as you say, it feels so crazy, you can't rule anything out.
Yeah, and of course, Michelle was born Michael LeVon Robinson. I can't tell you how much I've done on this matter. I mean, you know. Right. She's got a package most women do not have. There's a funny little ditty, Michelle Obama is a man, oh yeah, you want to track it down there. It's and there's a guy just did one, is Michelle Obama a man? And he purports to be debunking all the claims that she's a man, but it's quite brilliant. You can find it on my Twitter, @JimFetzer. He actually makes the case. It's simply overwhelming that, in fact, she is a man. In fact, she was registered to vote as a man until 2008 when Barack ran for president. And of course, I mean, the mountain of evidence to support it, James. I don't know if you've taken a look into this kind of kinky aspect of American politics, but there it is, pretty blatant, all things considered.
Yeah, it seems almost if they're tweaking the noses and making fun of the American people by putting a tranny in the White House and then put in a senile guy in the White House. And they said that George H.W. Bush, the older Bush, his wife was actually a descendant of Aleister Crowley, the Satanist. I don't know
Barbara Bush
if that's true, but Barbara Bush. It seems like they're tweaking our noses, putting these ridiculous candidates into the White House. It's like they're having a good time with it. I don't know what they've got in store for 2024. They may cancel, whether they cancel the election or put in somebody like a Gavin Newsom or somebody like a Michelle Obama. But I don't predict anything good, especially when the corruption of the 2020 election is yet to be corrected to ensure that this kind of voter fraud will not occur again.
Yes, yes, yes. I got at least one more story I want to share with you sort of backlash. People have turned against soft-on-crime prosecutors. They've done so much damage to America. At his peak influence, 75 Soros-backed prosecutors held office. As a result, 1 in 5 Americans, half living in the nation's most populous cities, were living in areas run by a Soros DA or someone who shared his ideology. The damage they've done has been immeasurable. Shoplifting and drug use was decriminalized. Repeat offenders set free with no bail. Murders, robbery, rape increased in Baltimore, Chicago, San Francisco, New York, and more. The worm has started to turn. Through a combination of corruption and voter backlash, a significant number of these DAs have been ousted. There's still a long way to go, but the message is clear. The Soros experiment has been a disaster for the nation. Well, get this. Soros is supposed to control 220 radio stations leading up to the 2024 election with a $400 million Odyssey bailout. This is very, very disturbing, James. How long do you think that guy will allow conservative radio stations to stay in operation? Odyssey, in a statement, called the cash injection a significant vote of confidence in our company and the future of radio and audio. Soros Fund management and lawyers didn't immediately answer requests for a comment. It's just the latest media investment for Soros, who became a boogeyman for U.S. conservatives after throwing millions behind liberal district attorney election campaigns. James, this guy has probably done more damage to the United States than any other single individual anyone could name. It's just outrageous.
Yeah. Before that, of course, during the George Floyd riots, he was backing Black Lives Matter and Antifa, I believe.
Yeah.
And, you know, that whole thing was so organized that when rioters went into cities, they found pallets of bricks waiting for them to throw into stores. It was like, it was very organized. It was not organic or spontaneous.
Very good.
And yet it's such an irony. He burned down parts of cities, and yet on J6, a peaceful protest, one of which people being incarcerated,
right,
given a no bail,
right, right.
You know, it's like the contrast and the fact that the Justice Department and these DAs you mentioned are now working, weaponizing themselves against freedom of speech and anybody who disagrees with the Democratic point of view, which is so destructive. Here in Massachusetts, we're a sanctuary state. We now have 250,000 illegal aliens. We're paying for them. It's ironic that in Massachusetts, you know, you'll probably pay at least $2,000 for a small apartment. Yet the illegals come in here. They don't have to pay a thing for their housing. They get free health care, free cell phones, free food, and cash. And no wonder they're lining up at the border with a deal like that. You know, they're getting better benefits than the American taxpayers who are paying for these people. And I got a report recently from somebody who was in a very nice neighborhood, very nice town, and they built up migrant housing where they stay for free. And there's so much crime going on, so much drug dealing out of this migrant housing. People are moving out now. It was once a nice neighborhood. They're moving out, and some people are actually breaking their leases and paying penalties just to get away from the criminals in this migrant housing. I'm not saying they're all criminals, but a good number I've heard that Venezuela emptied out its worst criminals and sent them up to the United States, and they're not being vetted. So strange. I'm sure you've seen this comparison, but TSA, they pat you down and they look at you, and if you got a too big of a shampoo bottle, they reject
it. It's ridiculous.
Unvetted illegal immigrants can come in. We have people up here in Massachusetts, state police and nurses, who I was a nurse myself, who lost their jobs because they wouldn't take the vax. But there's no vax being required of these illegal immigrants. You know, it's a total double standard. It's being deliberately designed to destroy America. It's one of the many things going on right now that are harming our culture. We're being attacked, it seems, on every front.
We agree completely. And get this very strange thing. I'm done with Google. Wholesale loss of trust after unbelievably irresponsible racist AI goes mask off. It's bizarre. Gemini, the predictable digital poster child for racist, anti-white, anti-conservative, historical revisionist culture, as opposed to the neutral purveyors of information they claim to be. James, it is stunning. We couldn't sum it up better than Mario Jurek, director of Dirac Institute at the University of Washington, Seattle. He writes, "I'm done with Google. I know many good individuals working there, but as a company, they've irrevocably lost my trust. I'm moving out. Here's why. I've been reading Google's Gemini damage control posts. I think they're simply not telling the truth. Our AI image generator feature got it wrong. Here's more on what happened and how we're working to fix it. The whole thing is worth reading. For one, the text-only product has the same, if not worse, issues. Second, if you know how these models are built, you know, you don't get these incorrect answers through innocent mistakes. Gemini's output reflects many FDA years of labeling effort, training, fine-tuning, prop design, all iteratively guided by the team who built it. You can be certain that before releasing it, many people have tried the product. I mean, it's just shocking. Gemini is a product that functions exactly as designed and an accurate reflection of the values of those who built it. They include a desire to reshape the world in a specific way. So strong, it allowed the people involved to rationalize themselves as not just acceptable, but desirable to train AI to prioritize ideology ahead of facts, to revise history, obfuscate the present, outright hide information that doesn't align with the company or staff's impression of what is good. I don't care if some of that ideology may not align with your or my thinking about what the world would make the world a better place. For anyone with a shred of awareness of human history, it should be clear how unbelievably irresponsible it is to build a system that aims to become an authoritative compendium of human knowledge. Remember Google's mission statement? But would you actually prioritize this ideology over facts? James, it's just stunning. What I like is Google has already lost $70 billion in market value after the Gemini AI has been exposed as woke. Here are some images of Vikings. You didn't know the Vikings were black? Google, parent company Alphabet, lost over $70 billion in market value. Stock prices falling as much as 4.4% Monday, following the pause on Google's Gemini AI image creator and both service of Gemini's responses in the chat feature. James, this is just insulting. I mean, it is grotesque. What an abuse. What a charade. What a fabrication. Unreal.
Yeah, how can you trust something that's supposed to be a reference for you, like an encyclopedia reference? It is an AI image generator. And you showed the examples of the Vikings. And this is the first time, even before Gemini came out, I'd seen a Viking king, ancient Viking king from maybe 1,000 years ago, portrayed as a black woman. And BBC produced a drama on King Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn. Well, Anne Boleyn was played by a black woman. Now, there's nothing against black people, but Anne Boleyn was not black. And this wasn't a light-skinned black woman. She was dark as night. Again, nothing against black people, but it's a distortion of history. You can see pictures of Anne Boleyn. She was not black. And this has been going on for a while, but now they've almost taken it to its zenith with Gemini. And I understand that when you looked up Google founders who were portrayed as Asians, which they were not, it's like totally anti-white. And I've even read that Gemini would not say that pedophilia was wrong. It's completely woke. And they've actually had to take it offline for a while because there's so much. They weren't expecting it, but they got tremendous amount of backlash on it. But it just shows you how the whole culture, whether it's Disney or Google, has gone totally woke and very, very destructive. It's Orwellian to change history. It's right under George Orwell.
Yes.
You're going
yes.
back and saying,
yes.
This is the way it was, and it's the way it
yeah.
was.
Well, you have historical revisionists, such as with regard to the Holocaust, who are trying to get it right. This revisionism is trying to get it wrong, and it's deliberately distorting the past for the sake of ideology and political benefits. It's
right.
Repulsive, just repulsive. James, when we hit the bottom, I'm going to open for callers. I won't be surprised if we get them, but I have in the past had a producer. I no longer have. He retired. So it's an open question. But I want you to have plenty of opportunity to add further thoughts of your own and tell us what you think are the most important issues going on in the world today.
Sure. Should I start on that now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, we've already covered some of them, but the election and then the horrible influx of the illegal immigrants. And then there's the absurd climate change mandates, you know. Actually, I've got a graph. I did a post on climate change. And it seems that there are 60-year cycles where for 30 years the temperatures go down and they go up. It was around the 1880s. It was actually a heat wave. Even Canada was in the hundreds, you know. It's like it's natural. 1913 or so was when temperatures reached their low point. And they had something called the White Hurricane, the Great Lakes, where 12 ships were sunk by these snow hurricanes. But then temperatures started to go up. You had the Oki Dust Bowl in the 30s, and then temperatures kind of peaked during World War II. And then they went down. And I remember 1969, it was really cold. We had a lot of snow, and we had so many school days off due to snow, we couldn't even make them up. And then 78, we had the great blizzard in New England. And in 78, I've got a clip of this. 1978, Leonard Nimoy was hosting a show called In Search Of, and he had one episode was called The Coming Ice Age. And he shows all these pictures of ice and snow. It says that climate scientists predict that that soon the Earth will be covered with glaciers. And Time Magazine had cover after cover about the coming ice age. And then the natural cycle began and temperatures began to rise. But this time Al Gore said it was due to carbon emissions and cows farting. And we were all supposed to make sacrifices. But then they found out that Al Gore's home in Tennessee used 20 times more energy than the average American home, even had an indoor heated pool room. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he became governor of California, said climate change was a top priority. Well, he didn't want to live in Sacramento where the capital was. So he lived in his mansion in Los Angeles, and he didn't want to drive. So every day he took a private jet. And L.A. Times pointed out that private jet used more, gave up more carbon in one day than a car would in a whole year. And so the elites, they don't, and you know, Bill Gates uses a private jet, it burns 485 gallons an hour. They don't live by the rules that they set for us. They want us to live in tiny homes, not the mansions. When they don't want us to drive gas-driven cars, well, they fly around in gas-driven jets. You know, it's so in your face, the things that they're doing. So climate change, lockdowns, not being able to live anywhere except the 15-minute city and getting government permission to leave it, the war on food, the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, which we've already discussed, the healthcare crisis from vaccines, autism, sudden death, the war on natural foods, the chemtrails, the geoengineering of weather, the directed energy weapons that hit Maui, apparently, and again, the transgenderism and the normalization of things that would have been an abomination just 20 years ago. But I have to say that the most dangerous one is the potential outbreak of a third world war. That is what I would be most concerned about, either from Ukraine or the Middle East, because that would destroy. You know, and one problem I have with them, Jim, I have a hard time believing they would want an all-out nuclear war, because then why are they building all this 5G infrastructure and 15-minute cities and things would be destroyed by an all-out nuclear war? I sometimes wonder if they envision a limited nuclear exchange. You might remember an old movie with Henry Fonda called Fail Safe, where there was a limited nuclear exchange. They might want to just take out a couple of cities to scare people enough to frighten them into accepting world government as the only solution. Those are some of my thoughts on that. Like I said, we're being attacked on many fronts. The one that concerns me the most at the moment is the possibility that these people might be crazy enough to start a world war that we can't win.
Well, what's become of the role of the United States in the world, James? We used to have a certain degree of moral authority, it seems to me. Right. We and Israel are the two great terrorist nations in the world. And, you know, I don't know which is more deserving of despite. But God knows America is no longer deserving of any praise or admiration. We have sold our soul to the devil.
Right. In fact, there's a meme out where, you know, years ago, Muslims would say America is a great Satan.
Yes.
Would say no. And now people are saying, you know, I think you're right.
Yes.
We have become a great Satan. It's terrible to see when I remember what America used to be like and the transformation that has taken place within our borders. It's disgusting. I wish I could be like Doc and Marty and Back to the Future and get in a DeLorean and go back to 1955. I'd rather be living back then, honestly. I might miss the internet and the access to instant information, but I'd rather be living in a moral culture. You know, we really had common moral values in the 1950s. This was a moral country, and it took a lot of Hollywood and a lot of television and a lot of bought politics. politicians to gradually disseminate new values into the culture so that people don't even realize that there was once a different America, an America that was good, it was moral, essentially Christian, and the type of traditional values it has. And by the way, Putin, as you know, has criticized the West for losing its own moral base.
Yes, yes, and perfectly appropriately. And you and I grew up in a similar period of time. I was born in Pasadena in 1940, and then those eras, those decades, you know, and in La Habra Heights when I was a kid, South Pasadena when I was junior high and high school. I mean, it was a wonderful time to be in America and in California. I mean, really, Montezuma's revenge had really not shaped up. But now, of course, it's so much worse with the illegals coming in on every front. I'd like most to get your further thoughts about the invading hordes, James, because I fear that may be the single greatest threat. Granted, you know, I agree about nuclear war potential, and I see it very difficult to avoid. But this threat to our national security that's been allowed to go forward without any protest, that Biden is basically not just open, he's bribed foreigners to come in, giving them all kinds of benefits that are not being given to Americans at our expense. Your thoughts?
Right. Well, I actually lived in California when I was a child, 1958, 1959. Unfortunately, my father's company went out of business. And so, the company is working for it. And so we had to sell our home in California at a loss. The $33,000, believe it or not, so infinitely more. We had a swimming pool, palm trees. We had two lemon trees in our yard. I really loved it out there in California. But, you know, in 1952, I read this, 94% of the population was white. And today it's 35% white. And sorry to say that we did well under white people. You know, if you look at, honestly, at most of the great inventions, the great cultural advances, most of, you know, the telephone, electric light bulb, they were made by white people. And it seems James, that the powers to be understand white people to be their greatest threat, so they attack us on America.
Hold that thought, and when we come back, we'll be taking your calls. Let me give the number, 608-957-872, but I'll repeat it after this break. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it, that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes, that Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer with my special guest, James Perloff, today. We're covering a wide range of subjects. If you'd like to call, raise questions, make comments, you're welcome to do so. The number, 608-957-8727. I repeat, 608-957-8727. James, return to this topic about the invasion across our border. It's the greatest national security threat of my lifetime. I think perhaps in American history, absent the Civil War. I mean, maybe that too, because of course Americans were dying on both sides, and thus it had the highest toll for any war that we've ever engaged in. Your further thoughts?
Things have changed so radically. You know, I'm married to a legal immigrant, is now a U.S. citizen. But, you know, it used to be if you wanted to become an immigrant in your country, you had to get a visa. And to get a visa here in the United States, you had to basically do one of three things. Either you had to have be in school to get a green card, or you had to have a job by an American company and be gainfully employed. Or you had to be married to an American citizen. So the rules are pretty tight. And if you didn't, you had to go back to your country. But now, it just anything goes, you know, just no vetting, just to take you in, you fly to the city of your choice, and you'll get free everything, you know, at the taxpayer expense. This is a complete reversal of the rather sane immigration policy we had before. And by the way, other countries, like Mexico, they require voter ID at elections, and they strictly guard their borders, and we're protecting Israel's border from Hamas, supposedly. We're protecting Ukraine's border from Russia, but we're not investing anything in protecting our own border. This is ludicrous. It's insanity. And we're just seeing insanity across the boards. I mean, things that don't make sense, they aren't rational, they aren't logical, they aren't just. It's so sad to see this happening on a broad scale in America. And, you know, you have to pray for God's intervention in something like this, or else a great awakening, which we've been trying to do through alternative media. There are people waking up, but we need to, if we're going to restore America to what it should be, we need leadership that can do that. But they have to get around the illegal ballot stuffing and the Dominion voting system if we're going to get anybody decent back in there. But anything would be an improvement on Joe Biden at this point.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Two of the principles that define Mexico's immigration policy, by the way, are number one, you must be able to show you have something to contribute to the good of Mexico, carpenter, plumber, doctor, lawyer. Number two, You must have the financial resources to support yourself and family members coming with you, that you not become a burden on the state. James, if we just had those two simple policies, 95% of our border problems would be eliminated forthwith.
Right. Oh, yeah, we definitely need to. Well, there's a lot of memes being made. You know, they say that the Florida National Guard is going to contribute to the defense of Texas's border. They've got a Florida National Guardsman marching next to an alligator. And I don't know if you saw the story, but there's a wildfire that's broken out in Texas. It's a series of wildfires. It's getting close to a nuclear facility, which is being evacuated. But some people have joked that maybe the Texans started the wildfires just to keep the illegal immigrants out. But this is a nasty situation. And one of the problems, of course, as you know, is that some of these immigrants may actually be sleeper agents who, if a world war was to break out, would get messages on their free cell phones telling them to begin an attack and start attacking American infrastructure.
Yes.
There's dangers on many fronts from these illegal immigrants, from crime to possibly being sleeper military agents within our own borders. The complete loss of control over the situation really began with the Biden administration. They've been trickling in for years anyway, but it's just opened up just one more dimension of insanity that we see in this country right now.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. How many different ways are we threatened here? I mean, the most obvious, pure demographics. You got millions of non-Americans. There are quite a heterogeneous lot from all over the world. As you observe, Venezuela has emptied its prisons and its insane asylums. And they won't take them back, James. They saw this was a good deal to dump their human refuge, their debris, into America. So we become the world's largest garbage pit of humanity. It's just grotesque. So that represents what could be a potential permanent change in demographics, making the country more black or non-white. And, you know, Hillary always talked about diversity being our strength, but it's absurd. Diversity isn't strength. These people don't know English. They can't communicate. What contribution are they going to make? They're here to suck on the teat of the American taxpayer, and Biden has given them plenty and plenty to suck on. It's just outrageous. I mean, they're not only getting transportation to the border, they're getting these debit cards, they're getting these cell phones, they're getting lodging, they're getting food, they're getting medical care. You know, Denver's public hospitals are collapsing, James, as a consequence. Right. They're simply overwhelmed. And I mean, no surprise.
Yeah, because our hospital infrastructure was not designed to meet, millions of illegal immigrants coming in and demanding free health care. We designed it for the system that existed before then. So, of course, we could see our whole hospital system, I suppose, across the country, besides Denver, start to collapse under these kind of pressures.
And if this isn't the handiwork of George Soros, I can't imagine what would be. I mean, this is perfect for his agenda for America.
Mm-hmm. Sure. They're trying to destroy this country. I mean, there's no other way to explain it. It's not happening by mistake or mistaken good intentions. They understand what they're doing. They understand that this is dangerous and that it doesn't make sense. I can't believe that the people at the top are that stupid. They don't know how harmful this is.
Right. It's all deliberate. Then we have the Senator Dick Durbin. I'm in Wisconsin. He's in Illinois saying, sure, we need to give a path to citizenship for illegals who serve in our armed forces. Well, I think that has multiple aspects, James. One is these illegals are going to be willing to shoot American citizens. American citizens aren't willing to shoot American citizens, but these illegals will be. And on the other hand, they create a potential army or guerrilla warfare entanglement in awaiting. As you were saying, all they need is to wait for the signal from their cell phone. Now is the time to attack. They'll be given specific targets, I have no doubt. I mean, how could we accept such a thing as taking place? And it, Grotesque.
Yeah, if they start to infiltrate our military, this would give them weapons, which they could just go AWOL and start shooting places up, you know, in order to take the country down, especially if in the midst of a Middle East war, or an expanded Ukraine war, or maybe China attacking Taiwan, who knows? But the potential there to actually equip illegals with weapons. We rely, American gunners rely on their guns at home to protect themselves. But if the illegal immigrants are given, you know, machine guns and armored vehicles, they could start to have an advantage over the rest of us who just want to live normal lives and just keep our weapons on hand in the case of emergency.
I think Black and Latino communities are coming to realize these invading hordes represent a threat to their welfare because they're going to be willing to work for lower wages under more harsh conditions. Right. And what they have earned, legally, legitimately earned, is going to be destroyed. They're going to have the carpet pulled out from under them. And it's happening, no doubt about it. No doubt.
Yes, I've seen Black and Latino people protesting what's happened in their own neighborhoods as their neighborhoods have become sanctuary environments for illegal refugees. Here in Boston, there's recently an interview with a woman, and she lives in, a Black woman who lives in downtown Boston, and she was bringing her kids to a recreation center where they would play basketball and have other healthy activities. But they can't go there now because the whole place has been taken over by illegal immigrants. So we're taking away our own facilities, which we pay for with our taxes, and it's been given for free to these invaders. Just a total insanity.
Think of this, James. The governor of Michigan is inviting Michiganders to take migrants into their homes. Can you imagine?
And there are people in Europe, I've seen on social media, they've been killed by the immigrants they took in their homes.
Of course.
I've seen this happens all the time.
Or their children are raped. Yes.
Yeah, they destroy the people they're moving in with. There's actually an island in Italy where they have so many illegal immigrants, they outnumber the local population. They started smashing their way into homes. And now the indigenous Italian population was forced to evacuate the island. It's been taken over by illegal immigrants. There's just craziness. It's Europe. It's basically the white Western nations that are being targeted. It's not, Latino nations. And you have to ask, why aren't the Arab nations that are so oil rich taking in these immigrants, you know, why aren't they doing anything to solve the problem? Why is it only Europeans and Americans and Canadians that have to deal with this situation? It's obviously deliberate. It's an attempt to destroy what the deep state regards as their basic enemy, you know, the white Christian civilized population that really built up the world. And now they're trying to take it down so that the deep state can have control, depopulate the planet, and just leave behind a remnant of slaves who will serve their purposes. That's basically what they have in mind.
And I have the impression that agribusiness is big on all this, that they're thrilled to have these hordes pouring in, and that the Democrats think they're going to be voters, they're going to increase their voting base. Right. So at present, federal law doesn't allow non-citizens to vote, but in local, they're changing rules. In San Francisco, I think they had their first non-citizen on their board of supervisors. I mean, it's just, you run out of words, adjectives to describe the horrors that are facing this country today under the Democrats. I can't imagine why anyone would ever vote Democrat again in their entire life, James.
Right. Well, there's an interesting situation. I've been working on an article on the Lincoln assassination, which I've been meaning to do for some time. But a lot of evidence that John Wilkes Booth was actually persuaded by not Southern, but by what we call the radical Republicans, were more like Antifa, like Democrats in that time. They were pro-Marxist.
Yeah.
And they were in favor of letting blacks vote in the South at that time. And some people think, well, they're very kindly, they want the blacks to vote. But here in the North, Abraham Lincoln had suspended the right of habeas corpus, which would give people the right to a trial, the right to know what they've been charged with. By 1864, about 13,000 people had been put in prison under the radical Republicans for simply disagreeing with what was going on with the Lincoln administration. And so they weren't concerned about freedom. And the reason they wanted the black vote was they knew that if they gave the blacks a vote, they'd vote Republican. And this would consolidate their power up in the North. And in the meantime, many Democrats who fought for the Confederacy were disenfranchised. They couldn't vote. They even lost their property. And the Southern states were put under military rule. Yeah. Lincoln actually wanted to have reconciliation with the South. He wanted malice towards none, as he put it. And he wanted the Southern states to return to their status quo. Radical Republicans didn't want that. You know, people in the South knew that John Wilkes Booth killing Lincoln would mean disaster for them. It would mean vengeance and bitterness and suffering for the South. Man. There was no reason to kill Lincoln from a Southern perspective, but there's plenty of reason for the radical Republicans who were left wing at that time. You know, the Republican and Democratic parties evolved over 160 years, but this is not new. Yeah.
We do have a caller staying by. Paul, join the conversation.
Oh, sure. Absolutely, Paul. Yeah.
Right. So there's a whole history of the Civil War, of course, with Lincoln was essentially a communist, and a lot of these the so-called radical Republicans you're talking about were also communist Marxists. I mean, it's well known. It's been uncovered by many researchers that Lincoln actually believed in these things, and he corresponded with Marx. So, you know, we're getting screwed. The main reason I called, though, Jim, as usual, just the usual trigger for me is when you just within the last few minutes said the Democrats are doing this to us. And, of course, you talked about they would hope to increase their voting base.
I agree, Paul. I agree. Of course, sure. I agree. I think
Democrats are one shell of a deeper, deep state, and certainly this goes back to Zionism. And you know, I'm half Jewish myself, so I won't mind saying that the ethnically loyal fraternity of Chabad and Likud and B'nai B'rith are and AIPAC are ultimately behind these things. Although I consider them sort of the human top of the pyramid, but beyond that, I do believe that Satan and his demonic minions are kind of running the show above them, if you want to take it to a spiritual plane. But if you're getting at a Zionist element beyond the Democratic shell, I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, well, as the professor knows, I don't hint at anything. So I just say it. So, yeah, that would be my response again to finish with.
Accept the idea what I was going to say. Jewish component in all of this, because I've been so schooled to see Jewish people as entirely victims, even though we're kicked out of 109 countries, as they say, or maybe even more than that. You're on the money there. This is not to deny it. But sometimes as we state things, we'll put it in terms of the Democratic Party. And it is a Democratic Party on the surface that's implementing these things. But there's a deep, you know, we've talked about the deep state, and the deep state goes back to these elements you're talking about.
Paul, you know, I don't think I've ever had a guest with whom I was in more sync on more issues than I am with James Perloff. I haven't yet to hear an issue where we were divergent. And, of course, we also both agree with you that the Zionist role here is massive and deserves emphasis, even if occasionally from time to time I talk about Democrats. You make an impeccable point.
Well, I hardly have made any points today, but I'm going to object to this term Zionist, because it's a concept only. It does not exist. Jews are a race. It's racial biology. Ultimately, this is a biological problem. If it's indeed true that 109 countries, and of course many people contend it's more, that was never a Zionist problem, because Zionism is relatively recent, okay? So this goes all the way back to as far as you want to take it, right? And I'm sure your guest is familiar with it, so I won't continue to pound away on the dead horse, but this is not so-called Zionism. This is essentially And everybody knows it's not all, okay, Jews, so there's no need to articulate the not all argument. It's implicit in every topic we talk about, such as not all blacks commit crimes and not all Jews are involved in this. However, if we're going to exist in the aggregate and we're going to think in the aggregate and think conceptually with our border and our nation, then we have to act without regard to the not all. So we wouldn't have an immigration problem if we limited immigration to white people, right? Would we have an issue if we limited our immigration to white people? No, of course. You said something earlier in the show about, well, if we required them to have a skill or they had to have money or whatever, we'd eliminate 95%. Well, sure. Okay, but how about this? Why don't we limit it to white people, which is really what the immigration laws used to be. And so, again, the whole thing makes me sick. I'm so effing tired of it, because it's all dancing around the obvious elephant in the room, and that it's not these illegal immigrants or, quote, migrants. It's non-whites. People don't want all these mestizos. They don't want all these blacks. They don't want all these Asians, because then it's not going to be a white country anymore. And that's why I am so sick of politics in general, because no politician has the balls to say this. And until we eliminate the Federal Reserve and go back to the proper monetary system, this is going to get worse. These people don't care about votes or money. They are buying the world and forcing us to live in the world that they construct for us. And we can all see it with our own eyes. And all this migrant crisis is, they're putting the finishing touches on this, on us, believe it or not. I mean, this is something they started over 100 years ago. And it's over. In 2 to 3 generations, if we don't have lots of dead bodies underneath our feet, we're going to lose. It's just that simple. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks for hearing me.
Oh, Paul, those are excellent arguments. I liked them all. James, any thoughts you'd like to add?
Yeah, I do like to use a not all argument. You know, my father was Jewish, but he never went to synagogue. He rejected Judaism. All of his friends were Americans. He was totally assimilated. His biggest concern was not Israel. His biggest concern was whether or not the Red Sox won the pennant. He was a totally Americanized Jew. And there's a lot of them like that. You know, I was at a party with some truthers lately. We're kind of knocking the Zionist Jews. And it turned out that one of the women, the whole Kohlstein party, her father was Jewish. And she's not. Neither he or her father was in favor of Israel or the Rothschilds or any of that. So I do like to make a distinction between the Zionist Jew and the non-Zionist Jew. And the Terry Cardi is a perfect example of that. They burned the Israeli flag. So I don't like to lump all Jews in one category based upon their ethnicity. But at the same time, I'll fully acknowledge that organized Jewry, again, Shabbat, B'nai B'rith, and Likud in Israel, is behind Jewish supremacism, and they're ethnically loyal to each other, will shut out non-Jews and have taken over the entertainment industry and the media and to a large extent the Biden administration in this country. So our guest is saying the truth, but I just prefer not to greatly generalize about the Jewish population, because I know that there are many Jewish people who are not in favor of these things at the same time. But no question, you know, the Kalergi plan was a Jewish plan to destroy white Christian civilization. And then in America, you had this guy, Israel Cohen, who wrote a book called a Racial Plan for America, which called for elevating the blacks, because the Jews didn't really want to fight the Aryans here in America, but they thought they could weaponize the blacks. And that was, they wanted to elevate them in sports. He had the old Jackie Robinson thing. And I wrote a thing called The Mystery of Denny Galehouse. It was a big mystery in 1948 when the Red Sox were tied with the Cleveland Indians for first place. And Cleveland brought out their ace pitcher for the playoff game. It was the first time there was a tie for first place. The Red Sox manager brought out his worst pitcher, a middle relief pitcher, an old relief pitcher named Denny Galehouse, who got knocked out of the box. Well, it turned out that Cleveland was the only team with black players. And then Hollywood made a movie about the Cleveland Indians featuring the manager and the owner and the players, called The Kid from Cleveland. And you can see that the Red Sox manager was told, just as the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers was told to bring up, he was a Freemason, high ranking Freemason, to bring up Jackie Robinson. So part of that plan, the Red Sox had to lose that playoff game. every player on the Red Sox team was against starting Miguel House, but he got started because the Red Sox had to lose. So a team with black players, they wanted to give a message. If you got black players, you're going to be champions. Hollywood's going to make a movie about you. This goes way back. There's definitely Jewish component, but it's not all Jews.
These are all interesting details and stories, you know, but we're running out of time here. So going back to this idea, forget about the component. It's not a component. It's a Jewish agenda. You may not like to hear it, okay? And the bottom line is there is no way forward without these, forget about the not all, but without the using the generalization, okay? How else are we going to do it? I mean, you fill a room full of people, right? And you say, which ones are left? Which ones are right? Which ones are Democrat? Which ones are Republican? Which ones are conservative? And they're just people from everywhere. You can't tell, but you say, which ones are black? Which ones are mestizos? Which ones are Jewish? And of course, there's been a lot of admixture, but a lot of people can still recognize Jews. And this was known throughout European history. They were recognized. They were segregated into ghettos and so forth. And in many cases, it was voluntary. There's a whole history about this. The Jews wanted to live separately, and that was the way most of the Europeans wanted it, including the Russians. So we need our own territory. We need our own territory. It's that simple. Every nation, every race needs its own territory. And that means all the others got to go. There's no other way forward. Otherwise, we're screwed, and we're going to continue this crap for as long as we're around, and it's not going to be that long because their agenda is for our demise. There can be no doubt about it.
Well, the Germans did do a pretty across the boards elimination of Jews, although some Jews served in the German army, of course, and not all were put in concentration camps. I prefer sort of an intelligent review of people and ferreting out those who are, you know, in favor of this racial takeover of America and those who are not. I believe in, you know, each person is made in the image of God and that we should individually distinguish those who are
okay,
in favor.
Well, okay, now wait a minute. This is for the fun. That's a ridiculous statement. Each person
reasonable.
Is made in the image of God. What does God
mean? Hang on, Paul.
But you just can't bring in these sayings that people say this such thing, like we're all created equal. No, obviously we're not. We're not all made in the image of God, because what the hell does God look like then?
Oh, it's got to do with a moral ideal. We'll continue the conversation. James, wonderful conversation.
Okay.
Spend as much time as you can with your family, your friends, and with police weapons.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Hang on, let me shut that.
Join me in the Brian Roux Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Roux Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.